minds of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. Say you better listen to the Bishop Mason. But they don't give you any choice, cause they think that it's treason. So you had better do as you were told.
Better do what you're told, especially if you live in New Hampshire, which, you know, I got to be honest, this one caught me by surprise. One of the state reps up in New Hampshire, this guy named Will Infantine, very interesting, infant, arguing against the Paycheck Equity Act, you know, making sure that, hey, that women and men, if you do the same job, make the same wage. I'm of the mindset you just organize, have a contract, and it's all right there in black and white, pretty simple, don't need a law. But, you know, in some places you do. His argument, very, very interesting. And just our quote of the day, men, he claims, by and large, make more because, well, some of the things that they do, their jobs are, by and large, riskier. They don't mind working nights and weekends. They don't mind working overtime and outdoors. Men work 5 or 6 hours longer a week than women. And when it comes to women and men who own a business, women make half of what men do because of the flexibility of work. Men are more motivated than women. Yeah. I got to wonder what my next guest thinks of that. She's the Secretary Treasurer of the North Carolina AFL-CIO, Mary Beth McMillan. Thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate being on the show.
So what do you think of this idea that, you know, well, men work harder than women and they deserve more money?
The last time I went to the store, men and women pay the same price for a loaf of bread or for a gallon of gas. So if we're paying the same prices, we sure should earn the same wages.
One would think. But, you know, and again, to me, this is another one of those reasons why I think organizing and unionizing is so important. Because I'll be honest, every job I've ever had has been a union job. Where it's all laid out in black and white, men and women. It didn't matter who was doing the job. You did it. You got paid for it.
That's right. That's why a union card is so important for women and people of color, because it creates equal pay no matter, you know, what your skin color or your gender. And I think that when we talk about pay equity, we always need to talk about workers' right to organize.
So I understand there's a movement going on across the South. I think it's extremely important. Being from North Carolina there, you're at the heart of this. Because I've been saying for you some time, at some point, don't the workers of the South take a look at who's making money off their back and say, hey, I'd like some of that. So I'm encouraged to see that there is some real push to organize.
There is a real push to organize, and it's very encouraging that the AFL-CIO at its convention in September passed a resolution to develop a Southern organizing strategy. I think the labor movement nationally realizes that if we want economic justice throughout this nation, we've got to organize the South, because that's where workers have the most difficult battles. It's where we have the lowest wages, the most poverty. It's where the auto industry, the aerospace manufacturers, and other companies are coming to avoid union contracts and exploit workers. And the South's the birthplace of Walmart, the Tea Party, and of anti-union laws like Right to Work for Less.
So, you know, walk me through this, because, you know, you just laid out a number of things that made my ears go perk up. The lowest wages, I've seen statistics say the lowest rates of health insurance, the lowest rates of coverage by pensions, all of these negative things that I think are negative. I would think that as a culture, you would see people clamoring to say, hey, wait a second, how do they get it up there in the North and we don't?
I think that's right. You know, one of the fast food actions that we've seen around the country have been so exciting, and they're organizing fast food workers here in the South. And I was really struck because one of the organizers who working in North Carolina organizing fast food workers told me he went in a Burger King and a worker there said, you know, I've seen these actions on TV. I've been waiting for you to show up. And I think that's the case throughout the South, that workers are ready to organize and they're wondering, where the heck are the unions? And these workers can't wait. Economic justice can't wait. And so workers here are ready, and I'm encouraged that labor is beginning to make more investment in organizing workers here.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that people have to look at is, you know, over the last several decades, we have seen the share of the wealth that workers create ending up in the pockets of the few while the pockets of the many are empty. And I look at CEO pay, the skyrocketing CEO pay that, you know, the hardest work some of these guys do is moving money from one pocket to the other. I think that's an organizing tool in and of itself.
I think you're right, and I think it's great that the National AFL every year does the CEO pay watch, and every year you look at this outrageous pay that CEOs are earning. You know, this past year, CEOs nationally earning 331 times the average worker, you know, 770 sometimes a minimum wage worker. It's ridiculous, and it really makes clear this big fat lie that companies can't pay workers more money. If CEOs are earning billions, you better believe they can afford to pay workers more than a minimum wage.
Yeah, but we're led to believe that, you know, as things are, they've always been. And you look at the CEO, because, you know, I had someone tell me the other day, you know, Rick, we've always had rich people. I said, that's true. But I don't know that, other than the Gilded Age, that we've had this kind of rich people.
That's right. I mean, how much is enough? You know, back decades ago when unions were strong and we had a strong middle class, CEO pay was only about 40 times the average worker, and now we're talking 330 times the average worker. How much is enough? And when will we realize that by driving down workers' wages, we're hurting the whole economy? Because workers are consumers. They can't even buy the products they're producing.
Yeah, that sounds to me almost like a third world country where, you know, the people who are making the TVs don't have the electricity in their homes to plug one in, let alone buy one.
That's right. I mean, many of these workers who are working at, you know, at Darden restaurants, they can't even afford to go out to a meal at Red Lobster. So eventually, you know, what's going to happen? Who are the consumers going to be if they no longer have any buying power?
So what are you guys doing? I know North Carolina is the home of Moral Mondays, which I think is an amazing movement of people finally taking to the streets. Because I got to tell you, Mary B., I'm of the mindset that the only way things change is when people are rattling the cages. You look to the Great Depression. They were literally, the workers of the country then were literally tearing this country apart brick by brick. And there's part of me that goes, the only time things change is when the Koch brothers and their ilk feel that their heads could end up on platters. And people are in the streets demanding change, which is why I think it's important that the Moral Mondays and other things go on. I guess I'm curious what your thoughts are.
No, I agree. Moral Mondays have really energized people here. You see, really throughout the South, the most diverse, fastest-growing economic justice movement in the country, whether it's Moral Mondays or the fast food actions. Workers here, you can only hold folks down so long, and workers here are really ready to rise up. And so it's very encouraging to me what we've seen, not just here in North Carolina, but now in Georgia and South Carolina, you know, the Moral Monday movement spreading around the South. And it's encouraging to me, too, to see that unions are making investments. It was heartbreaking that vote that UAW lost in Tennessee, but I am confident if we hadn't had right-wing politicians interfere, those workers would choose to join a union. You're seeing, you know, more and more unions making investments here. Here in North Carolina, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee has this big campaign to win justice for farm workers who pick tobacco for Reynolds American. United Food and Commercial Workers are beginning to organize poultry factories here. So I think that there's a lot of movement, and a lot of workers are saying, hey, we can only sacrifice so much, and it's time that we get our fair share. So it's encouraging what I'm seeing here.
Do you think, in looking at the VW, UAW situation, do you think that's the new model for union avoidance, for union busting? To be using right-wing politicians and outside billionaire money, where the company doesn't matter about the company. Company could want it or not want it. The billionaires don't want it. The people who run this country don't want it. So even if the company did want it, tough, you can't have it because the ideologues at the top are never going to allow it.
I think that is the new model. And you see these corporate-funded politicians, whether it's Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin or these folks in Tennessee, really injecting themselves into what should be between the employer and the employees and really doing everything they can to bust unions and restrict employee organizing. And I think that it's something that people do need to take to the streets and protest. You know, we may not have the money that the other side has, but there sure are a lot more of us than there are CEOs and right-wing politicians. So I think it is about taking to the streets. I think it's for unions, it's about thinking about innovative, non-traditional ways of organizing. I think that's what makes the fast food actions so exciting. You see these workers saying, you know, we're not going to let our employer or national labor law tell us whether we can have a union. We're going to organize and we're going to take action and we're going to take back our rights in the workplace. And so I think that what we're seeing around the country is about not just building a movement for economic justice, it's about building a new labor movement, a movement not limited by the walls of a workplace or the inadequacies of a labor law. And it's really exciting to me to think that we're going to build a movement that's for all workers, whether they're temps, white-collar professionals, college athletes, or the baristas at your local coffee shop. I think that we are going to build a new labor movement. So whether you work in a factory or a farm, a McDonald's or a Walmart, an office or a university, this is going to be the movement for you.
Now, are we looking at on the IWW level, or are we looking at returning to skill trade unions? What do you see the ultimate end being, or hasn't it been written?
I don't think it's been written yet, and I think that it's exciting to see, you know, organizing among domestic workers and among guest workers, you know, people that aren't employed by the same employer. I think the situation with the college athletes is really exciting. I think you just see all around the country very diverse groups of workers saying, hey, we're not getting our fair share, and it's time that we did. We've had enough, and we're fighting back, and we're going to get what we deserve.
Yeah, I've been saying for a while, the conditions are ripe for mass organizing, not just in the South, but all across this country, which is why you see states like Mississippi passing preemptive laws against boycott picketing and talking to your neighbors and PLAs and all kind of things, that you're seeing all of this preemptive stuff to kind of, here in Pennsylvania, for instance, I don't know if you know this, but there was a guy who, the chairman of the Labor and Industry Committee actually ran for state Senate, got crushed here recently. He proposed a piece of legislation, thanks to Alec, that would ban talking to your coworker. In fact, they would label talking to your coworker outside of work as stalking.
I hadn't heard of that. That's ridiculous.
But that's where we're going, and this is not just here in Pennsylvania. This whole idea to stop organizing and stifle people from talking to each other. Because, look, I think the people who are sitting at the top in the corner office looking down on us, I think they realize we've taken a beating, and there's only so much of you-know-what people are willing to eat before they start coming together. So they need their laws to keep us apart.
I think that's right, and I think that corporate America realizes that unions give workers a voice not only in the workplace, but also in the policy debate and at the ballot box. And this is really about political power. And so that's why I think you see the other side so afraid, especially of organizing in the South. You know, that's why right-wing politicians went so crazy in Tennessee. And here in North Carolina, our state chamber of commerce actually cited in their annual report as their big challenge the fact that labor was beginning to organize the South, and they said that if that happened, it would bring about serious political upheaval. And, you know, that may be scary for the right wing, but that's certainly exciting for workers, because I'm ready for some political change.
I'm absolutely there with you. And for me, you know, last line of questioning I've got for you, because for me it all comes back to education. You have no idea how many times I've had people tell me, you know, Rick, unions were needed something, and I'm sure you've heard this 1,000 times too. Unions were something we needed 100 years ago. We don't need it now. We're so much better than that now. And, you know, here on this program, we talk about 109 years ago last week, the horrible Lochner decision and what that meant to workers for a generation. I think the education process of the bloody history of organized of labor in this country is an integral part of all of that.
I agree. And especially, you know, here in North Carolina and throughout the South, there's such an anti-union bias and culture to overcome. It really is a mission of the North Carolina AFL to get people to talk more about unions and to educate people about the importance of the labor movement to all workers. And, you know, when you hear the right-wing politicians in Tennessee, they spread all this fear. It's really incumbent on progressives to spread this message of hope to counter that fear. And we're on a mission here to get folks to talk union. Actually, on May Day, we're going to launch a campaign with the North Carolina AFL-CIO to get people to talk about unions. And we've really got to quit treating union like a four-letter word. And unfortunately, even progressives sometimes don't want to talk about unions. And if you're going to talk about poverty and inequality and problems in our public schools, then you got to talk about why those problems exist. And it's because people don't earn enough income. And that's why, if we're going to talk about inequality, we have to talk about workers' right to organize and collectively bargain.
Yeah, and what I think the right wing of this country has done masterfully, and you got to give credit where credit is due, they have done an amazing job of divorcing citizens from their government and workers from their unions.
No, I think that's right, and it's incumbent on us to take that back.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so encouraged about what's going on in your neck of the woods and in the South, that there's actually some momentum moving. Now it's just a matter of keeping that going and increasing those numbers. Mary B., I appreciate you taking time for us. I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.